Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the IAA Mobility Visionary Club podcast. It's special because we are live in Munich on the sidelines of the IAA Mobility Conference, and we have a live studio audience, which is very exciting. Today's topic is micromobility, and here to help me dig into it, I have two special guests, Philip Sadek, a principal at BCG. Philip, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And Natasha Spörle.
Spörle, almost.
I did my best. Your public policy manager for DACH at Bolt. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
Let's set the scene. Share with us where the micromobility industry stands today. And maybe you start, Natasha.
Well, first of all, thank you for having us here. I think this is also really nice to talk about micromobility today, because a lot has happened in the industry in the last couple of years. It's a quite young industry if we're talking about shared mobility and shared micromobility. We're only here for 4 years now.
Okay.
E-scooter sharing business exists in Germany since 2019. In the beginning, there was a lot of money in the industry. So there were a lot of vehicles on the road, not very efficient operations, and understandably some dissatisfaction on sides of cities and citizens. And I think at the moment we're really at a turning point of the industry, because we need to become more profitable. There's a pressure to actually become more efficient, so have more efficient operations. And I think we're at a moment in time where there's consolidation going to happen. I think it's fair to say that in about 12 months, there might be 3 or maybe 4 operators left in Europe to operate. And I would say that one of those is from Estonia.
Okay. All right. We're going to dig into that, I think, later on in the conversation. Philip, did you want to weigh in on that? Because I have a separate question for you.
Yes, I can. I can add to that.
Okay.
I think yes, there have been some setbacks, and there are some struggles of some players that struggle with profitability, especially when we look into the US. But if we zoom out, the case for micromobility is still super, super strong. Mm-hmm. By 2050, we'll have 80% of the population living in cities in Europe, and the urbanization rate, it will grow to more than 70% worldwide. So more people living in cities means more demand for micromobility. So that is the demand side, but also on the supply side, we see that lots of cities are doing public statements about emission reductions and action plans for bicycle expansions and so on. So also from the supply side, there is more and more demand for micromobility.
What role does micromobility play in the global mobility transformation? How important is it?
So I think because of that, it will have a significant role. Yeah? It will be, this demand increase will mean that micromobility is an essential piece of the overall mobility landscape.
An increasing number of cities and regions are actively working to improve the use of micromobility, bikes, scooters. How do you evaluate the current developments?
I think by now, the stakeholders in cities almost everywhere have come to see the benefits that micromobility holds. It has less emissions. It's greener for the environment. It requires less space, because you can put more people on bikes instead of putting them into vehicles. It can be faster, it can be cheaper, it can make mobility more accessible to people, and it can also upgrade public transit. So with all of that, there are clear benefits for micromobility, and also we see that the ambition for micromobility is there. The European Parliament just earlier in this year, it passed a resolution to double the modal share of bicycle from 8 to 16% by 2030. So that's a significant ambition if we're talking about public policy and infrastructure topics, not such a long time frame, by 2030 already.
So that's the European level. Natasha, you're on the ground with DACH responsibilities for Bolt.
What are you seeing actively being done by cities? What's your experience?
I think Philip just mentioned two really important points. One is regulation, and the other one is infrastructure. And those are the two measures that are currently being taken by the different cities. Maybe regulation we can touch upon later on, but I think infrastructure is really important because this is actually the most effective measure of what cities can do in order to promote micromobility. And here we're talking about not only shared micromobility, but also private micromobility. So private bikes, private scooter use. And here it's about wide protected bike lanes just to bring people safely from A to B. So I think infrastructure is really a key in the measures that these have as a disposal for themselves.
The theme this year at IA Mobility is experience connected mobility. Scooters and bikes are just two of the mobility related offerings that you have at Bolt. How important are they as solutions to successfully mastering the mobility transformation?
I'm actually really glad that the headline of IA8 this year is connected mobility, because I think this is exactly what's important. If you look at the problems that cities are facing at the moment, it's too many cars in the streets, it's congestions, it's emissions that not going down, and they all struggle with how to get people from using their private car to using other modes of transport. And people use a mode of transport that is available, that's accessible, that's safe, and also comfortable. And for a lot of people, a car ticks all of those boxes. So it's quite difficult to get people away from a car. And you can only do that with a multimodal offer. So with having public transport, having car sharing, having taxi services, having micromobility offer. And this is what Bolt is trying to do, to have all of that on one platform to make it easy for people to choose another mode of transport than the private car in front of their garage.
That makes sense. You have to make it easy for people, don't you? Philip, what's your vision for urban mobility? How do we move away from car-centric mobility without negative reactions?
That's a big question, but I think my vision is many of the things that we have talked about earlier. So it's greener, it's more affordable, it's more accessible, it's also faster, it's better connected. All of those things is how the mobility landscape in cities in the future should look like. Now, what does it take to get there? That is not a trivial exercise. And there is not one single plug that we can pull in order to unlock all of the benefits from micromobility in cities. It will require that all the stakeholders put all hands on deck. So we need the shared micromobility providers to improve the unit economics, increase acceptance. We will need the cities to expand dedicated bicycle lanes and dedicated parking spots, improve the regulation. We will also need the public, like all of us, to lobby our representatives to do exactly that, yeah? Because it's our responsibility at the ballot box to make sure that the representatives put a priority on micromobility infrastructure if we want that to proceed.
Let's talk about the public for a second. Earlier this year, the city of Paris banned e-scooters after the public voted to remove them from the streets. I want to hear from each of you on this, but Natasha, I'd like you to go first. How do you evaluate this decision? What went wrong in your view?
Yeah, we've been talking about Paris a lot lately.
I know you're probably sick of the question, but humor me, because I think it's interesting and it's important.
I think we learn a couple of things from Paris. First of all, I think it's one of the common reactions to new things to reject them. And we often forget that people are not necessarily open to new things from the start. So I don't think within the mobility sector, where a lot of things have to change, it's maybe the smartest move to reject innovation.
But do people have a point? Because I live in London. There's a lot of scooters. Just if you're pushing a pram, blocking the path. Like, sometimes they can be annoying. Do you see why people, where this feeling came from? Or do you have some sympathy? Do you have any ideas about how to improve the things about them that some people view as annoying? Because I think we all agree that micromobility solutions are important. We want this transformation. How do we address these maybe legitimate concerns?
Yes, there are legitimate concerns of safety, of organization. I've just actually been to the next hall where we have a scooter standing there as well, where that is equipped with a technology for blind people so that they can basically hear the scooter so they don't trip over it anymore.
That's cool.
That's really cool. So we are working on those kind of things. And then also infrastructure is part of the answer, because you need to have parking stations to safely park a scooter. But maybe coming back to Paris again,
yes,
because I think there's a couple of few other things that we can learn from that. If you look at the turnout, we had 8% of people actually only voting on Paris. And they made a decision for the entire city and the entire industry. In other such elections or votes, you have a certain quota that needs to be met that didn't exist. So not sure in how far that is really a democratic decision then as well. And then maybe more on the regulatory side, we also see that what happened in Paris beforehand, because before there was a selection of three operators in Paris, which in such a young industry that is still evolving very quickly, doesn't really make a lot of sense, because then you take away the competition. So there wasn't any need for the operators left in Paris to really improve and be top-notch on operations. So maybe that's also one of the things that cities can think about, whether in a period like now, in such a young industry with consolidation happening, a selection of operators is really the most effective way, or whether other things are more effective to see change on the street, like infrastructure.
That's a good point.
If we zoom out regarding Paris from the referendum earlier this year, I wouldn't cast Paris as anti-micromobility. They are actually adding 180 kilometers of dedicated segregated bicycle lanes in the next 2-3 years. They also want to triple the number of dedicated bicycle parking slots. Yeah. So Paris has a vision to become 100% cyclable. Regarding the referendum, it is of course a setback for the industry, and it's a pity, because Paris since 2018 has been at the forefront. At the time of the referendum, there were more than 15,000 shared scooters on the road, more than in any other city in Europe. Now, why has it come to that? It's because of too many accidents. You did not have dedicated lanes. I mean, cycling in Paris today, it's still terrible. You share the road all the time with the car. And also, you didn't have the parking lots, dedicated parking lots, like you have in other cities, and in Oslo or so. It's an entirely different level of how to park your bicycle or your scooter. And that means poor parking practices on the streets. And as a combination of accidents and vehicles on the road, you then get a negative public reaction, and then the result at the ballot box.
In public discussions, it's often framed as cars versus bicycles / micromobility. Is it either, or how do we move to a healthy coexistence? Do you believe in a healthy coexistence?
I think overall we need multiple mobility modes in a city. It's not we will not have all the demand for mobility satisfied only with micromobility. But coming to your question, for many questions, it is an either or, right? Whether we allocate parking lots to cars or to micromobility, it's an either or. Whether we allocate lanes to mobility or to micromobility or to cars, that's an either or. And also the corresponding investments, there are some either or decisions there. And one anecdote, I mean, when I take the car in the city and I see a cyclist on the road, I always think, oh, a stupid cyclist get out of the way, right?
This is a big admission. Okay.
When I take the bicycle on the road, I feel like the road belongs to me if I need to share it with the car. So that speaks for a segregation of the two.
I want to look a little bit into the future and ask you, Natasha, a lot of these new mobility solutions, micro-mobility, they are introduced in urban areas in order to scale, I assume. How are you thinking about rural mobility? I'm from the States. Like, I can't take a bicycle down the LA freeway. What about us? What do you have for us? People who live in rural areas where maybe, what are you thinking about?
We're actually already doing quite some things in that area. I mean, first of all, Bolt in Germany, I'm talking about Germany now. We are here for 2.5 years now, and we're already in 70 cities.
Wow.
And you have to start somewhere. So obviously, you start there where the economics makes sense. But we're looking at clusters. So it makes sense to have some rural areas connected when there's a urban center connected somehow. So I think, for example, in the region of Nuremberg, just a little bit north here of Munich, the smallest city that we're operating there has 10,000 inhabitants. So it's quite small. And we're also connecting the different parts of the little villages that belong to the city. And we're connecting that because especially in those areas, public transport often doesn't exist.
Or the bus comes like once a day.
Yeah. It's a school bus.
Yeah.
And so there's really a demand there. And so this is really interesting. And we're also looking at that from an academic point of view. We're currently cooperating with one of the few bicycle professorships at the University of Wildau and running a couple of pilots in those rural areas to just see how can shared micromobility actually work there? What do the preconditions have to look like?
Very cool. Okay.
And one thing that is quite interesting for the rural area is like e-bikes. Yeah? 10 years ago, we didn't have e-bikes on the scale as we have them today. They were still a niche thing. But with the e-bike, the distance that people are willing to travel, it's double, triple than they do with the bike.
And if you're on a country road, that could be quite fun, actually, having the wind at your back.
If you have a bike path.
Yes. It's a fair point. I could talk about this for the rest of the day, but I want to give you guys an opportunity to do a little rapid fire round. So I'm going to give you two choices and you have to choose one, okay? No wiggling out with either or. Okay, Natasha, you're going to go first. E-bike or pure pedal power?
Pedal power because I'm still young.
You got to get those miles in when you can. Philip, micro mobility for daily commute or weekend adventures exploring your area, which I recently learned is Vienna.
Honestly, more the weekend adventures.
Fair enough. Natasha, free floating mobility offerings or station based solutions?
A mix.
That's a dodge, but I'm going to allow it. You get one.
Well, we're in Munich, so we have a mix here and it works perfectly.
I take your point. Philip, private micromobility bike or shared vehicles?
Shared vehicles.
Natasha, which superpower would you prefer? Unlimited strength or invisibility?
Since I'm in public policy, invisibility.
Philip, teleportation or time travel?
Oh, both would be awesome, but time travel is definitely something I would love to do.
And where would you go?
Into the future, into the past, so many things.
I want to go back to Egypt and see how they built the pyramids. That is like such a fascinating thing. Like, gosh, what technology was that? Okay, so we both choose time travel. Guys, speaking of superpowers, if you could immediately wave your magic wand and change one thing about the situation on micromobility, what would it be and why?
I think not a big surprise. Infrastructure.
Infrastructure.
Rededication of public space, more space for micromobility and pedestrians to make cities more safe for everyone.
All right. Infrastructure is a good wish. Philip?
One wish is hard because there are so many wishes.
You got to pick one. I'm going to be strict.
But we talked about infrastructure. What I am still quite hyped about is more product innovation. I think 10 years ago, we didn't have the e-bike on the scale as we have today. We didn't have e-scooters at all. With e-scooters, we changed to swappable batteries and so many innovations that still improve the hardware that we're using and the software. So I think the micro-mobility solutions that we're going to use in 10 years, it's going to look different from today, and that's going to be driven by product innovations.
I cannot wait to see. You guys have made me excited for the future of micromobility. A big thank you, Philip Sadek, a principal at BCG, and Natasha Spoerle, public policy manager for DACH at Bolt. Philip, Natasha, thanks to both of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.